You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Today on the show, we got Matt Zimmerman. We'll talk Arkansas, Texas Tech basketball. Also, Ethan Westerman will be in the studio. First, a word from Kendall King.
Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Arkansas plays Texas Tech this weekend in Dallas. It'll be an 11 a.m. tip-off on ESPN2 Saturday morning. Arkansas ranked number 17, the Red Raiders number 16. And we're joined now by Matt Zimmerman. He's the color analyst for the Razorback Sports Network, former basketball coach at Arkansas. Matt, when you look at this matchup Saturday, what stands out to you about Arkansas and Texas Tech?
I think that it's going to – one thing that stands out to me is that although Texas Tech's got an all-new team, now they've got their two best players played versus us last year, JT Toppin and Christian Anderson. But all those other good players, Williams, all those other good players that they had last year are gone. And we return a little bit more than them. We've got the four returners. But I was talking to Chin Coleman, and he made a really, I thought, important remark about Texas Tech. Although they have just Toppin and Anderson back, a lot of the new players like Atwell that they've plugged in, they're kind of very similar to the players they had last year. And he thinks they're pretty much a similar type team. Well, obviously that was a very good Tech team that went to the Elite Eight and was very, very close to being in the Final Four. And so I think we're going to see a very good Texas Tech team. There is a little bit of talk that this is not as good of a Texas Tech team. They did not play well at Illinois. Illinois is pretty good. And they sure didn't play well against Purdue. Purdue at one time has been the number one team in the country, although they had a blowout loss at home to Iowa State. But I think that this is a very good Texas Tech team. And when they beat us last year, to me, it came down to rebounding. They got like 51 rebounds on us. And if you'll remember back, Matt, they had like 22 rebounds. Now, Williams was a great rebounder. Darian Williams, he was a great rebounder, strong. But Toppin has always been their leading scorer, and he returns. And if Arkansas is going to win this game, they're going to have to rebound a lot better. You can't give up 22 offensive rebounds. That was an overtime game in San Francisco. But still, you can't give up that many boards. I think that's going to be a huge part of it. And I do think the kind of paying them back, although Texas Tech, their whole team, none of them are going to really know what you're paying them back for because they weren't there. But Toppin and Anderson will know, and Grant McCaslin will know, and some of the assistants there will know. And this Arkansas team has not been afraid really since Monday. They've not been afraid to talk about this is a payback. This is a revenge game for us. They've not hidden from that.
So that the other night with UConn in Florida, too, UConn was talking about that afterward, that they wanted to get payback for what happened at the tournament last year.
Yeah.
You heard Calipari mention this, I think, on his radio show Monday night, where he said he typically does not go back and watch the last game of the previous year or of any year. He said he did make an exception going back. He wanted to see what Texas Tech had done against Arkansas last year, and he said at several points, he said, how did we lose this game? When you look back on that matchup, number one, why do you think you mentioned rebounding, but are there other factors that you think caused Arkansas to blow that lead? And then how much does it even matter whenever Texas Tech doesn't have much of its roster back from last season?
Yeah, I don't think it matters hardly at all. I think it helps Arkansas in this situation because we do have players and coaches that want to pay them back. Mm-hmm. So that way it helps Arkansas. I don't think it helps Texas Tech any of what you said. I mean, Toppin and Anderson, they beat us. I'm sure they're going to want to beat us again. Toppin is from Dallas, so he's going to have a hometown game. But I don't know if it matters a whole lot. I think when we lost that game, obviously to rebounding, we couldn't get anything stops-wise kind of in that last 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. If you go back, and we did get some stops in the last 10 minutes, but it wasn't enough. And it, and our offense kind of, especially the last 6 or 7 minutes, our offense kind of, we started kind of clock management. We started playing a little bit slower. We seemed to be much more conservative, and we had a lead, and we were just kind of trying to hold on to this 16-point lead, and we couldn't do it. I think that we missed some – we've been shooting free throws well, and we missed some important foul shots down the stretch. I remember Jonas Adu. Remember, he was shooting so well like February and March at the free throw line, and I think one-and-ones are huge. I think they're a huge part of college basketball. I hate it that the NBA and women's basketball and high schools, they've all eliminated a one-and-one. I love a one-and-one. They're tough, man. And in that case, it hurt us. We missed a one-and-one, and we lost the game. You know, they had Williams made a, got that big stick back, that big basket at the end. He had two really huge plays down the stretch, regulation and overtime. Mm-hmm. To beat us. They don't have anybody like Williams this year. They do have, we talked about how they've plugged people in that are similar, but they don't have anybody as good as Williams. He was strong and tough, and he could jump. And to me, as I kind of watch them, they've got a lot of good players, but I don't think they have anybody that has that mindset that I'm going to go get it. I'm going to go make a play down the stretch. And that's what Williams provided them. You know, when you, if you look back on that game, now Toppin, I think he made a big bucket to give them the lead, like 83-81, and then I think DJ tied it, 83-all, and then Williams scored, put him up with like 7 seconds left, and then DJ missed the shot to tie it or win it there down the stretch at the buzzer. But we did a darn good job with Toppin. Trevin was on him some. Jonas Adu was on him some. Zvonimir wasn't in much, but he guarded him a little bit. And Toppin was bothered by our length. Well, we've got that kind of length again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, Williams with that huge 20 points, 9 rebounds, a week, Toppin struggled. And he ended up with 20 and 9 also. But he took almost 20 shots to do it. And Toppin's an offensive rebounding guy. I look back earlier this week, and of all those 22 offensive rebounds, he only had two of them. They had a big guy that's not there no more, Federico, a great name. I remember he had like 7 or 8 of those off. He couldn't score it really, but he did score a couple of putbacks, but he kept getting these rebounds and kicking them out for him. And we've got to keep them off the glass.
Well, Grant McCaslin, we've seen his team several times, even like an exhibition game. I think one of his last years at North Texas. Saw North Texas here. I remember they played one of the first games against Musselman's teams. I think they played him again the next year. His defenses seem, Matt, like they're really solid defensively. What do they do well defensively that can keep some of these games lower scoring?
Well, they play good, solid man-to-man defense. They're not going to run all over the gym and try to steal it from you. But they're going to try to be physical and kind of get their hands on you and try to make you make mistakes. And they're a very smart basketball team. And he preaches, and I've heard him in clinics. I talked to him when he was in Arkansas State, and he really wants players that can think the game, that aren't going too fast, that aren't making a lot of unnecessary. Now, you're always going to have some turnovers, but he wants minimal turnovers. Mm-hmm. They only give up 70, you know, and they, if you look back through their games, you know, now they've played a lot of Lyndon Woods and Sam Houstons and people like that, you know, but they, even the Purdue game is really the only time that their defense fell apart. Mm. And Purdue scored almost 90 on him. It was 80-something, but it was close to 90. And then Illinois got in the 80s as well. Mm-hmm. So this version of the Red Raiders has not shown as quite as good a defense as last year's Red Raiders that really would guard you. But they only give you 70 a game, which is great, but they hadn't played the world's toughest schedule.
What can Arkansas do to get Nick Pringle going? It seems like, you know, early in the season he was giving them something offensively. Rebounds are still there, you know, if he's not in foul trouble, but what can they do to get him going offensively again?
Hello there, Matt.
What's that?
Yeah, well, I think Nick Pringle has to be more aggressive on the offensive end. He's a good defender, and I think he knows this is where my bread is buttered, is on this defensive end. But Maddie's not been blocking a lot of shots. He does contest shots, but on the offensive end, I think he's got to be diving to the basket more. A lot of his role on offense is to screen, ball screens, down screens, sideways screens. He sets for guys away from the ball, but then he needs to roll hard to the basket and present himself as a threat. They're always going to run a lob play or two for him, and then he usually gets his other points like on a fast break lob pass from DJ or Darius or Malik. And so I think he needs to present himself more as an offensive threat, and that'll help him. I think another thing that I'm not going to say he's been disappointing on, but just he's not rebounded quite where he's rebounded some in his previous college years. And I think he's got to focus on – I don't think he's going to play 30 minutes a lot here because Malik Ewan and Trevin Brazil are really good, and he's going to play two of those three guys. Well, if you're going to play two of those guys the whole time, that's 80 minutes, right? So that's, you know, 25, 26, 27 minutes each. I think he's going to be on the low end of that. I think he's going to be more 20 to 22 minutes because Trevin's going to be more on the high end of that. And Malik's going to probably get a few more minutes than Nick before it's all said and done, just because Malik gives you a better offensive threat. But Nick is a better defensive player than Malik Ewan, in my opinion. So we do need him, and really all three of those guys. And it'll be an interesting conversation, Matt, as the season goes, that because all three of them aren't going to have the world's greatest game all the time. But we need all three of them to provide defense and rebounding and shot blocking, shot changing, and energy. And then some points will come.
I've been saying that I think this team's ceiling's really high because we've seen what DJ Wagner and Carter Knox can do, but it's been inconsistent to this point. How encouraging was what happened last Saturday with them?
Well, I thought it was good. I thought both of them played well. Carter in the second half shot the ball so well, and he looked like that confident Carter Knox. He's not been great this season. He really is not. We know that. I think DJ's been better than Carter. Not that it's a competition, but we need them both to play to their abilities. When I look at the four returners, Matt, I think that Billy and Trevin, it don't matter to them really who the guards are, who's playing point, who's off the ball, who's the setup man, who's passing me the ball. To me, that doesn't really matter much to Billy, really to Trevin. But I do think to DJ and Carter, how they're playing, who they're playing with, their role in that play, all of that does matter. I'm not saying they're sitting there nitpicking that. I don't think they are. I just don't think either one of them's been able to get into a comfortable offensive flow for more than one game at a time. And these two freshmen are so good that they're not going to wait on you to get on any kind of flow. The Darius and Malik want Carter and DJ to be outstanding on offense too. That just helps them. You know, when Carter's making all those three-pointers the other day, I'm looking at the coach on the other end, and Vance Wahlberg, and he's after he hits those shots, there's a dead ball, and he yells out there, his guys. And he said, he's hot. You got to get out there on him. Well, he's talking about Carter Knox. And then about two trips down later, boom, Darius blows right by his man. The help side defender was bellied up over there on Carter because Carter just made those threes. And Darius goes and scores. That's how basketball operates. And so Darius and Malik want those guys to be good. I just think they have to get more comfortable with two freshmen that are kind of a ball-dominant type players.
Wagner looks so good when he has the ball in his hands. It seems like the adjustment for him is when he's playing that off-guard position. How big of an adjustment is that for somebody who's so used and so good, like we saw last year, being in the point guard role?
I think it's a little bit of an adjustment. I think last year with Boogie, it was a little bit harder on DJ at times, right? And then when Boogie went out injured, DJ was able to just become, I'm the point guard now. This is the role I like. Me being the distributor, me being the playmaker, me being the play caller. And that helped him. He thrived in that better in the league. To me, he's a good off the ball guard. He's better on the ball. Mm-hmm. Will there be times that all of a sudden maybe Darius has a struggle or two? Because I think you got a heck of a deal if you have Darius and you have Malik looking to score from every spot on the floor, which is what they do, and having DJ setting those two guys up. And so that's a little bit of a still a work in progress. You know, this is a high-scoring Arkansas team. They've scored pretty well. But at crunch time of the two big games, we had possessions that, like, we didn't value them as much, and we took some tougher shots. Anytime that the two freshmen are shooting, you think they can make it. Mm-hmm. But there are different levels of difficulty in shooting. And sometimes they took very hard. You know, you think back to Michigan State. To me, we were better than Michigan State. We were on course to win that game. And then we had that stretch where we couldn't score it. And we had too many empty possessions. A couple times we missed open shot. A couple times we took difficult shots that didn't go in. And so it kind of happened that way with Duke a little bit as well. Mm-hmm. Duke kind of flipped the switch on their offense, and they allowed their offense to be a big part of the win. But Louisville game, another great opponent. We built that big lead, and we just kept our foot on the pedal so strongly that it didn't come down to one or two possessions at the end.
As a coach, what's the balance between wanting your team to play with an edge and not take any crap, and then it get chippy, like happened a couple of times the other day against Fresno?
That's a good question. The Billy getting ejected was a zero surprise, right? Anybody that saw it,
right.
And he popped him right in the kisser with his elbow.
Yep.
And just whacked him, you know, and unfortunately for the kid, he started bleeding. I think he was okay, but it busted his lips up. Mm-hmm. And so he was bleeding. And so the official, when he looked at that, usually they study that stuff, man.
That was quick.
I mean, he came, but he looked at it for like 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. And Cal was like, it's a double technical. And the guy, and he was like, no, it wasn't. He didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there is that balance. And Cal, I like the fact he doesn't tear those guys up. You know, when I worked with a coach for 17 years, his deal was, you get a technical, I'm pulling you out, and I'm the only one that gets a technical. Don't get a technical. You better control yourself. And he preached that heavy. I think Cal's more like, hey, do that. Stick up for yourself. Stick up for what you need to do, or stick up for a teammate. Mm-hmm. You know, and I get that. And not that my boss wasn't in that way, but he didn't want to give up the two free throws. Mm-hmm. And, Matt, we have been fortunate all year because we've had several instances, even with, like, Jackson State, Carter with, like, a 5'8 guard, mm-hmm. double technical. You know, obviously, I had a very good referee. It's not in our league, but in a Power 5. He texted me, you know, after he'd seen the replays of the Winthrop and said, their guy started technical foul. Your guy was much more aggressive, two technical fouls, ejected, or give him one, and I'm going to give your bench guys that ran all the way into the fray one. Mm-hmm. But either way, Arkansas is going to get two, and they're going to get one. And I said, you got to be kidding me. And he said, no, I'm very, very serious. That's how I would have called that. Mm. And if he would have been reffing that game, and he's a high major referee, they would have got two free throws in the ball. Mm. And so I love the edge our guys have. I love the passion that they have. I do think that we've kind of got into this, hey, let's have some fun and let's rough it up, and double technical's not going to hurt anything. You know, Trevin did that in that game as well, mm-hmm. double technical. And so we're just kind of in the double technical land, and then all of a sudden there wasn't a technical on them. They get free throws. We were beating them by 30, so it didn't matter, but we had an elbow to the face. If this is football or if this is baseball, your player sits out. Mm-hmm. I like how the basketball coaches have it. They're like, oh, we're not carrying nothing over. Shoot, we're letting that go. And I do like that very much. And so Cal's not had ejections. I think DJ maybe got he got ejected for leaving the bench the other mm-hmm. day. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Cal's not had that. He's not had a problem here at all with technicals. With or ejections, just here these last few games.
Well, they got to look at that rule too. I mean, DJ Wagner getting ejected for what he did during the Winthrop game was outrageous. I mean,
he
dipped his toe in the water, Matt, and they threw him out for it.
You can't. That's exactly right. And there are levels of that.
You have to.
DJ should not get, you know, the same as somebody that runs all the way across the floor and gets in the fray.
Exactly. Totally different right. between what he did and what Seeley did in that instance.
Yes.
Last one for you, Matt. Going back to Dallas this weekend, this is a city that historically has been, you know, meant a lot to Razorback basketball. You were a manager there at the height of this when you're playing SWC tournament games down at Reunion Arena. Just in your memories and your recollections of Arkansas going to Dallas, and maybe younger people who don't realize what the history is there, how would you describe it to them?
Well, of course, it was always called Barnhill South. I love that name. And, you know, we loved it. Our players loved it because Barnhill was 9,000, wild and crazy. And then you went down to Reunion Arena. It was, you know, 17, 18,000, and there was many of them Razorback fans. And it was a pretty affordable ticket that you could get.
Mm-hmm.
And we were fortunate in that league, those teams weren't tearing up those tickets as much. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Houston would have some fans, and, you know, you could play TCU or SMU, they'd have a few fans. Texas would have decent, but not like Arkansas. And so the Reunion Arena, Barnhill South, that was such a fun time, but it all went hand to hand and winning that conference tournament every year. You know, Coach Richardson, the last 3 years he's in that conference. No. The last 4 years he's in that conference, Matt, he wins the conference tournament. I mean, that's pretty crazy. Let's say that's 89, 90. Let's see, 87, 88. No. Yes. No.
The last three years
in that league, he won that conference tournament in Dallas. It just meant a lot, you know. And Coach Sutton, before him, had wins in Dallas that were big.
Mm-hmm.
And so it goes hand in hand. I wish we'd have won that game last year against Baylor. We just weren't quite ready for a zone defense at that time, and we lost. But it's great. It's great for our fans and our student population. Everyone knows when I was in college in 86 to 90, it was 13,000, 14,000. Now it's 35,000 people go to school here. And so many are from Texas. Those kids can just drive across town and come watch their Razorbacks play right there in the Mavericks' home. It's awesome.
Yeah. It'd be a really good environment. I think Texas Tech will bring quite a few people too. I was talking to their play-by-play voice yesterday. He said he's not sure they know it's basketball season yet with everything that's going on with football. But I have a feeling anytime they come to Dallas that they'll have a lot of people there in attendance. Matt, we appreciate your time. Safe trips down to Dallas, and good luck this weekend.
Thank you. Good talking to you, Matt.
All right. We'll see you, Z. Matt Zimmerman from the Razorback Sports Network. When we come back, Ethan Westerman will join me here in studio. First, a word from Kendall King.
Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They are committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at BentonvilleGlass.com. We wrapped up the podcast yesterday about 2 o'clock, and woo boy, I mean, the news that came out after that at Michigan is just, I would almost say, Ethan, it's unbelievable, but it is totally believable because, as is often the case in college sports, you can draw a line back to something that has happened at Arkansas. We have had our share of unbelievable type stories here. And, you know, as I hope we, just for people who maybe this is the first time you've listened or maybe you've listened several times, I want to discuss this more on a like kind of just a big picture level. I feel, you know, as I read about this, my first thought, and there's this online, there's a knack for people just to go way low with what's happening with Sherrone Moore. And I sit here and I think about, like, I sit there and, like, a guy has a wife. He's got three kids. I think he's got a newborn child. Like, think what this is doing to that family. So that's not why I want to discuss this. What I want to discuss this is, as I read about this and listened about this yesterday, obviously the Bobby Petrino 2012 situation comes to mind. I mean, this is as close to what happened with Petrino as I think we've seen, certainly at a major university, since that happened 13 years ago. And my thought, Ethan, was two-pronged, that it kind of this along with what just happened with Arkansas this season and Petrino being the interim coach for over half the year, it kind of finally puts a bow on the Petrino era, Petrino at Arkansas, whatever you want to call this. Here's what I mean that in two ways. Number one, he, you know, for all the people who thought, what if you hire Bobby Petrino again and give him a chance to just see what he can do? Well, now we know. Now we know. I still will maintain that as an interim head coach, he, what the 0-7 record, I don't think that's reflective of what you might have gotten with Bobby Petrino had he been your full-time head coach. But in order to be the full-time head coach, he had to win some games as the interim, and he didn't do it. The team showed marginal improvement, but at the end of the day, still a lot of the things, you know, the main things were the main things still with that team at the end of the year, and they were losing games in a very similar way. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that, you know, their offense wasn't good after halftime. And with the defense that Arkansas had this year, your offense had to be great really for four quarters in order for them to win games. And certainly I think, you know, their most winnable game against Mississippi State, I think Petrino's actions on the sideline, I think that, you know, certainly it helped Mississippi State get back into the game. But I also think, and we heard some of the players talk about this a few weeks ago up at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club, you know, when you see your coach doing that, it's almost like that is a license of permission for you to do the same. And so I think that Petrino certainly, even though I don't pin 2-10 on him, I don't pin 0-7 on him necessarily either, I do think that he has, you know, he had a role in it, a big role in it. So now we see what Petrino can do. So for everybody who said, well, what if you bring Bobby back and give him another chance? Now you know. But really the thing that I was thinking about as I was reading about Michigan was the number of people at the time, and certainly the number of people in the years since then, who said a team that, like a quote-unquote real team, a team that cares about winning, they wouldn't do what Arkansas did with Petrino. Well, Michigan just did it. Michigan just did it. Michigan, you cannot doubt that Michigan wants to win. Like, can you? I mean, this is Michigan. This is the national champion 2 years ago. And Moore, I mean, I don't think and I said this a few weeks ago when we were talking about coaching changes, I don't think his record at Michigan is what people wanted it to be through 2 years, but it hadn't been bad. I mean, they're 8-4. They were 9-3 this season, or they're 8-5 last year, but they did beat Ohio State, which I think is worth like 7 wins to Michigan fans. And, you know, they go 9-3 this season. And he was a big integral part of them winning the national championship when Jim Harbaugh couldn't coach 3 games at the beginning of the season, 3 games at the end of the year, and yet that team goes undefeated with him as the interim head coach in those times. So, I don't know. All of it it all brings Petrino and what happened here at Arkansas back to mind. But, again, you can't say that a real, you know, a quote-unquote real team that or cares about winning wouldn't do this, because we just saw Michigan, a team who they got a lot of warts and they've swept a lot of stuff under the rug through the years. They just did this with him.
Yeah, and I know we're not going to, like you said, get into the weeds of like what all may or may not have happened, but
we don't even know. We don't even know a whole lot of details at this point, other than the fact that the university said that he had a quote unquote inappropriate relationship with a staffer.
Yeah, but it just seems like, you know, whatever happened there was obviously, just as it was at Arkansas, a serious deal where you just feel bad for, you know, the direct people involved too. But it does go to show like Michigan had to do what it had to do here. I know like you said, the past 2 years under him, it's not like they were winning at maybe the Michigan standard that Michigan fans wanted, but it's not like they were bad. They were
17 wins, and they could have won an 18th at the bowl game.
Yeah, and it was an improvement, I guess, in win-loss record from last year to this year, so it looks like you're maybe building under a coach, too, to be back again next year, taking even another step further, but then this all happens. It is just crazy how that happens. It's like Michigan, I think, is maybe – not maybe, it's built more for, I guess, like a probably a rebound higher than maybe after Petrino at Arkansas, just because of the recency with a national championship, kind of the prestige around that program, to where I'll be just curious to see who they hire. But like for Arkansas, I mean, after the Petrino incident happens, it put Arkansas down a tunnel that it really hasn't, you know, come out of.
Yeah.
And it was nice this year, although it wasn't ideal circumstances, of course, for Petrino. And, you know, it's not really his team. It was like halfway his team that he was coaching, I guess, as the interim. But to have that chapter of closure, and I do think that it was certainly a chance for him. Like, for all those who were pulling for him and wanted to see him maybe have a great second chance story where this team, whenever he's the interim, just takes off and does great things and he gets hired again and has a chance to – it just didn't happen. I mean – at the end of the day, I mean, you can't go 0-7 and expect to win the job, especially the way that, like you mentioned, you know, the offense you can point to and say that was completely, like, that was his baby at Arkansas. You could tell the way they assembled it. It was finally his offense, and it was the reason they lost a lot of games. I mean, it was, you could
also
never
the reason they had a chance to win a lot of games. It's really weird that you can say that about the offense. I mean, yeah. it was good enough to keep them competitive, but it was not good enough to get them over the hump.
Exactly. And it's like that you finally got the defense to where it could maybe give you a chance in a game, the big maybe, but then the offense kind of falls apart after halftime between turnovers and just inability to move the ball. I was thinking about this the other day. I was like, did we ever taste at all season for Arkansas? Put aside Alabama A&M and Arkansas State. I'm not counting those games towards this. But just I always struggle with this word.
Complimentary.
Complimentary.
Yeah.
It's like the colors on the color wheel. You have your complimentary colors. But we saw that. I was like, did we ever? We got one quarter of it under Petrino. It was the first quarter against LSU.
Yeah.
It was, you got a special teams block for touchdown. Defense got some stops. Offense scored. They did have a fumble in that quarter, but
they had a turnover right near the red zone too, which was kind of.
But they did score a touchdown in that quarter, and it was the only time all year that you saw a team under any of whether it was Pittman or Petrino like that. It actually just played
first
like
half
a team.
Against Auburn too. They got the defensive touchdown. They were holding Auburn to some field goal attempts.
I still would say the offense was pretty bad though that half.
It wasn't great.
Yeah, the offense, we just didn't.
But to your point,
the point
you
is that we
see
didn't
it
see
often.
It very much this year, and he had a chance, and he didn't. It didn't happen.
And if they would have won, I think if they would have won three games, and if one of those three was say like LSU or Texas, I think there's a decent chance he could have gotten the job.
Yeah, he had his chances, and he didn't get it. And I'm just glad, honestly, that I'm not saying I'm glad he didn't get the job. I'm saying I'm glad that there's now closure to this chapter. At least it just feels like. The whole Petrino saga and what it put Arkansas through for however many years, 13.
Long time.
It's just like, it's good to have, it felt like he had his chance again, and now you can move on. Michigan, I'll be curious to see like what their next step is. If this does send them down a dark time in their program history as far as on-field results, they just seem more equipped to be able to bounce back and get a hire that's going to keep kind of that wheel turning.
Well, I thought it may had over embellished a little bit, or that maybe embellished a little bit a few weeks back when I said that I thought that maybe 25% of the Power Four jobs would come open this year. This is 16 now.
Yeah.
16 out of 68. So we are one job away from there being turnover in 25% of the Power Four jobs. And I think that there's a decent chance that Michigan could go pluck a coach away from another Power Four job, because I mean, this is one of the jobs. And I think that, you know, if you grow up in the Midwest, that this is really maybe this and Ohio State, maybe one or two others, Notre Dame would probably be in there. But like, these are the jobs that you really hold up on a pedestal.
Yeah. Unless it's like a Brian Kelly, I feel like
That would be a tough hire at this point.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Unless it's a kind of a tough hire, I think that's probably, I would say it's likely that we're going to see that.
You know, when Arkansas hired John L. Smith in 2012, I probably, you know, it's hard to go back and think about where your mind was 13 years ago. But I probably thought it was a good hire because he had head coaching experience. He knew the team. But in retrospect, when you kind of start to find out some of the things that were going on with him in the background, I think the season makes a little bit more sense. He was going through a bankruptcy. And, I mean, like there were just things going on in the background that it's like, whoa, that could be a major red flag. And you wonder how the 2012 season might have gone differently, say, had Tim Horton been promoted to interim head coach, or Paul Petrino, or, you know, Paul Haynes was a defensive coordinator at that time. You know, there were other people on staff who certainly, I think, would have been qualified to be able to step up and be the interim head coach. But they made the decision that they did. And Arkansas has been, like you said, in a spiral ever since then. It's a lot easier now, and it's a lot easier when you're Michigan to overcome the timing of this. Because, you know, the question is, and it becomes, who are you going to hire? I mean, there ain't any American coaches left to hire. They all got hired elsewhere. Unless you want to go get Alex Mortensen from UAB or something. I don't think that's going to happen. You know, and so the coaching carousel is kind of stopped spinning. But this is Michigan. This can make a sitting head coach somewhere say, I know it's, you know, tell your sitting AD, wherever you are now, say, hey, I know it's in a good situation. This is, the timing sucks, but this is my only chance to go take this job, and I'm going to go do it. So I think that, you know, between that and the fact that, you know, this is all happening before the portal opens, there's a chance that Michigan can get through this without much of a hiccup.
It takes a really you know, I don't want to say out of the ordinary, like, higher level, but like what Ole Miss did by promoting somebody to be their next coach to, like, stop the domino, too, in a lot of these instances. So I'm just curious to see.
That was such a weird hire by Ole Miss, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, he's been good, though.
He's been good, but.
But still. Yeah.
Very strange hire.
But that's what it takes to stop the dominoes. Like, because I'm just curious after, you know, if Michigan hires a sitting coach, that opens another job. And the domino just keeps going until somebody decides to hire from, like, a, you know, an up and coming coach from a smaller school, or promote somebody that you really stop feeling the you know, the ripple effect. It's just crazy. This just felt like yesterday, this news, the cherry on top of what's already been a crazy coaching cycle. And
is it the cherry on top? Is there something else, you know, coming down the pike that makes this look, I mean, this is a big deal with what's happening in Michigan, no doubt. And certainly all the legal stuff that is still playing out with the coach who was fired there. But I've almost gotten numb to the craziness of the coaching profession. It's like, oh, you know, and I was talking to Christine about this the other day. You see two or three or four headlines a day now where it's like, that would have been 5, 6, 10 years ago. Like, wow, that's kind of crazy that's happening. Now you just kind of look at it and it's like, well, you know, that's just Wednesday. That's just Thursday.
Let's say the Lane Kiffin stealing all the headlines, I guess, lasted for how long, and now it's just normal, and you're like, oh yeah, that's just how it is.
Yeah, I mean,
it's like, it's just moving so fast. I think it's funny. Obviously, this situation with Michigan is completely different circumstance than all these other ones. But you know, what is it? The law of motion. Last year with
you're asking the wrong guy. Wrong guy there.
Last year with the you know, with all these schools needing to, you know, get ready for revenue sharing and stocking up, you know, getting their finances right. Like, you didn't see coaching changes. Like, the SEC
there were like two.
Yeah, and I just
none in the SEC.
I think we've seen the college football law of motion, that for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. And that's this year, now that it all settled back in and schools were ready to fire again, it's just, we have seen the craziest coaching cycle in a long time. And of course, you have then a circumstance like this at Michigan that just is, you know, out of left field, that even adds more craziness to it. And you just wonder, maybe if this means you'll have a calmer cycle next year, because a lot of it went down this year. But who knows? It's just, we've had back-to-back extreme years, is what I'm trying to say, is we had the calmest coaching offseason, and now we've had the wildest.
Yeah, and it's still not over. What happens at Michigan? Did they take a sitting Power 4 job? What does that do to that team? And the other thing with Michigan, what happens to their AD? Like, because, you know, an AD, when you have something like this, your administrator can get caught up in that too, and maybe they go as well. I think they're dealing with an interim president right now at Michigan. Could it be a situation where you have an interim president, maybe an interim AD running the search? I mean, this could get really strange there. All right, we ask on our message board at wholehogsports.com for some mailbag questions today, and we're going to get to these. And I'm just going to read these in order. I didn't ask for football. I didn't ask for basketball, anything in particular. So we got some other sports in here too. And it begins, Ethan, with baseball. It says, when will the SEC end the SEC baseball tournament's marriage with Hoover and make it back to Memphis, Dallas, Nashville, or better yet, Charleston? I believe this is someone who lives in South Carolina.
I was about to say, the better yet Charleston definitely seemed like there is a strong appeal from Hogg 2009.
So I think in Hoover, the SEC's got I don't know the exact year, but I want to say it's through 2028. They've got an agreement to be in Hoover. I don't see the SEC tournament moving out of Hoover. If you would have asked me this 16, 17 years ago, I thought that there was a little bit of a movement afoot to potentially, if not move it out of Hoover entirely, to put it on a rotating basis. I think Memphis was really interested in having it at AutoZone Park in downtown Memphis. Hoover, there's something about – basically, that city has gone above and beyond what I think a lot of cities would do in terms of keeping that ballpark updated, making upgrades there, and you know, making it where – you know, you don't say the SEC baseball tournament. You say Hoover. Like there's a real connection between the city and the event. And with it being so close to the SEC headquarters in Birmingham, I just don't see it moving away from Hoover. I think that as much as I would like to see it rotate, and I'd say the same thing about the SEC football championship game, and I'd say the same thing about the SEC basketball tournament. When I was younger, the basketball tournament, it rotated. It might be in Memphis one year, and then it's in Atlanta, and then it's in Nashville, and then it's in Tampa. There was a year or two where it was in Birmingham. And New Orleans hosted a lot of SEC basketball tournaments, and I kind of like that, where you rotate it around to arenas that are within your footprint. I'd love to see the same thing with the SEC football championship. You know, Nashville's building this beautiful new facility downtown that I think is going to have a roof on top. You could play it there. You could play it in Houston. You could play it in New Orleans. It doesn't just have to be Atlanta. I've always felt Atlanta makes it a very tough environment on certain teams. So like when Arkansas was down there playing Georgia, well, I mean, you're playing a road game. Even when they were playing Florida down there at the SEC championship, I thought, you know, you're kind of making it a road game. Hoover, you've got your teams that, I mean, they've just kind of got a baked in advantage in terms of having people in the seats right there. LSU, they bring all their motorhomes up and they make quite the spectacle out there, to be honest with you. But, even though I don't think it's going to happen, I'd love to see where maybe this would rotate around to different minor league parks in the South. You know, I mean, like I don't even want to go through all of them. There are so many really nice minor league ballparks across the South within the SEC footprint that I think would make great venues for this. But I just think that they're so intertwined, the SEC baseball and Hoover, that it's probably not going to move out of there anytime. I don't see it happening anytime soon.
Yeah, it seems to me like it's more likely for the SEC to make sure every single sport has just its permanent home. It seems like that's what direction they're going, is they like having Greenville, South Carolina be the home
Greg
for the
Sankey
women's tournament.
Greg Sankey has said that he wants to have a destination city for each sport.
Which I personally kind of like that, to be honest, with the tradition that comes with it and seeing, like, if a place is doing a good job with it. If a place is not doing a good job, move it.
I've wondered if softball might go this route. Yeah. Now that Oklahoma is in the league and, you know, you've got that facility over at Oklahoma City that hosts the Women's College World Series.
That's where I was going to go next, is I think it's more likely than for this to happen baseball than for softball to stop doing on campuses and then find a home for that. I mean, and they've tried doing now, I guess, with, like, who really gives a rip? But, like, SEC Media Day is moving that from city to city. Yeah. But, like, it seems not like me. These postseason events, they are more there's the trend to just make sure it's one city that you keep it a tradition to go there. And I guess if you're other fans in the SEC, you just hope Georgia stops being good at football, because I think that's going to be in Atlanta for a while.
By the way, we got so many questions here. I thought we might get a few. We got a ton. We may revisit some of these tomorrow. Mm-hmm. We certainly won't have enough time today to get to all of them. Here's one for you. And we talked with Matt Zimmerman about this a little bit earlier, Carter Knox and DJ Wagner. The question says, what does the season look like with Knox and Wagner not contributing at the expected level He said, we've had excellent contributions from elsewhere on the roster, but I'm concerned with our vets not performing up to par. I thought what they did the other day in North Little Rock was encouraging. Now, I understand the competition being what it was, but I'll be interested to see if they're able to kind of take some momentum off of that playing quality competition again the next 2 weeks with Texas Tech and Houston.
Yeah, I guess my simple answer, what will it look like with them not contributing the expected level, is what it's looked like right now. I mean, just you're still in games with who you do have. I just think that it's good to remind yourself that it is December, and basketball teams always look different in March. And so that's think about Carter Knox this time last year. He wasn't performing at a great at a high level this exact time last year. He really bloomed late in the year. I think also with DJ Wagner, he had a whole adjustment period last year, between Boogie Flan getting hurt, moving from, being the primary point guard, or from off the ball to being the primary point guard. I think he's back to, right now, Darius Acuff is for sure your primary point guard. Put the ball in his hands, but Wagner adjusting back to playing off the ball some. I'd like to see them go more of, subbing them in and out, but you also want Darius Acuff on the court a whole lot. So I just think that it's probably for those two learning new roles, and they'll be different players, I would guess, in March than they are right now. But if it stays the same, you'll just see what you're seeing right now, which is a team that's in every game.
I'll appease Pavlov here and entertain this question. He says, how cold is it in the studio? And my answer would be, not cold enough.
Really?
It's always hot in here. We got these lights up here, and they add about, 100 degrees. And I usually walk out of here sweating.
I was about to say, I didn't know if this was a comment, why are y'all always wearing, hoodies and stuff?
Yeah.
I think he might think it's freezing in here because of how we dress.
Well, I mean, I dress like this because of how it is outside.
Yeah. But you're always...
If I was dressed for how it feels in this studio, I'd probably be in here in, athletic wear every day.
I'm trying to think of what you wear for the podcast in August and September.
I usually wear, what I'm wearing outside. It's golf shorts and collared shirt.
Yeah, well, I know that once we reach a certain threshold of the year where it's pretty chilly outside, you're constantly a hoodie or black hat.
Cold. Yeah, I hate being cold.
So I'm with you. I'd rather be hot than cold.
I went on a walk this morning and I had the I layer up when I go outside, and so I had on a North Face neck gaiter. I had on two or three layers up top, like a pair of joggers, long wool socks, gloves. Ski cap, I say ski cap, but a warm hat. Kind of look like I'm about to rob people, to be honest with you. I'm afraid people, because it's they're all dark colors. Got a lot of black on, and I think people, and sunglasses, and people kind of give me some weird looks. It's like, hey, it's just me. I live right over here, just on a walk.
Yeah, I've been bundling.
Ashley said my wife told me today that I should take our chocolate lab out with us, and it would look a little less
suspect.
Threatening.
Yeah, I'll show you a photo after this of my walk attire the other night. I was so cold that I definitely looked like I took this photo outside a bank that's next to my walk. And it was not planned. And I realized after I took the photo, I was like, oh, wow, I look like I'm a robber.
You remember that during COVID, we all looked like people that you would be, scared to death of pre-COVID. Because, you got everybody's got all these big masks and sunglasses and...
I've been cracking up looking at videos of the 2020-2021 season of the players on the bench in their little squares wearing their masks and just it was such a different
thank
time.
God we're past that.
Yeah.
Here's a question, and after I read this, tell people about the new hire today. Razorbacker 79 says, I know we're getting close to having most of the new football coaching staff put together. Is there any indication that they'll hire someone with extensive Arkansas ties such as Tim Horton or another former player? He goes on to say, other than the secondary coach, Darren Wilson, not seeing a lot of people with Razorback ties yet. So one thing I want to say here real quick, I think some of these people that have been reported as taking jobs at Arkansas, I don't doubt that any of them are coming. I've got nothing to doubt that. But I don't know that everybody that has been reported, Ethan, is going to be part of what we consider to be the, the traditional 10 on-field coaches, the ones who can also go out and recruit, just like your quarterback's coach and your tight end's coach. I get the sense that part of the, the quote-unquote increased financial investment in Arkansas football is more assistant position coaches like what you see in the NFL. you know, and I'm not saying that any of these are what you're going to see at Arkansas, but I'm just using some, some using this for an example, say like an assistant offensive line coach, an assistant quarterbacks coach, an assistant defensive backs coach, assistant linebackers coach. I think you're going to see a lot more of that. And honestly, when you look at the teams that are winning right now, like Ohio State, like Marcus Johnson, who they've hired away from Ohio State, he was the assistant offensive line coach at Ohio State. Ohio State, Georgia, Bama, I think that these teams that are winning a bunch right now, you know, this is one of the edges that they were able to find, you know, 5-10 years ago, or maybe even a little bit longer, where they were able to add more coaches. It's just you can still only send that certain amount out on the road.
Yeah, and just doing a quick little like look over a lot of SEC teams like that you think of as being, you know, well off financially, like Alabama, LSU, like a lot of these teams have. They have a lot of coaches like that. I mean, there's at LSU, there's an edge rushers coach this year. I just think that it's, the way it's structured might not look traditional how Arkansas, you know, sees when you see that somebody's being hired as the cornerbacks coach, which you told me to inform the people. It's reported to be TJ Rushing, who is at Auburn.
You said it sounds like a better running backs coach name.
I didn't say that. Anthony did. So give him credit there. But it does. He was a really good kick returner at Stanford back in the day, doing my TJ Rushing homework this morning. But he was at Auburn this year as their safeties coach. And the year before that, he was the special assistant to the head coach for Hugh Freeze there. So that was a little bit different. And then before that, he coached he's only coached defensive backs. He was at Stanford. He was a cornerback and a return specialist. But he coached at Texas A&M, DBs, Memphis, Arizona State, Northern Arizona. Obviously, the Memphis overlapped with Ryan Silverfield, so that's where this connection comes about. And then, you know, you're just – I think with a guy like this, it gives me the vibe of he would be one of the recruiters, being a former NFL player. I think he has a strong reputation of being a good recruiter. So these just keep on coming. We knew that it would be a very high – number of personnel updates that we'd be getting this offseason, and they just keep on coming in. It's like every day we're getting somebody else new who's linked to coming to Arkansas.
To answer the original question, I don't know if they're going to have somebody who's got a Razorback tie.
Yeah.
I just don't. And, you know, Silverfield was asked about this in his introductory press conference last week, and he kind of talked around it. I felt like you used the whole, I was at Memphis and we used to point over to Arkansas from the pyramid, and but he never really answered the question. This is as close as he came to it. He said, quote, we'll look for people in the staff that make sense. I assume that there are going to be some people with some ties to this great state and this wonderful university, but didn't say outright.
Yeah. It's one of those things, like if we don't have a name or know anybody who so far is, it's like, we don't, I mean, we can't say that we have confidence that
he will. I guess Darren Wilson, you know, as he mentioned, Darren Wilson, he's got a tie to Arkansas, but it's not.
I don't think it's the traditional tie that, you know, the question asker is.
There's a lot of people who think that was an issue for Arkansas the last few years. You know, like for years and years, I mean, whether it be Tim Horton or James Shebest or Barry Lunny Jr., like there was always an effort to have that guy, Dow Loggins, for a couple of years. That guy who had some ties to the program's past, and the last two or three years, you just haven't seen that. Now, Pittman, again, that was kind of a tie to the program's past because, you know, he says that he grew up a fan of the Razorbacks and he'd been an offensive line coach here for a few years, but it's not the same as having someone who actually wore the uniform on the coaching staff.
We're thinking of it timely because he was just on the podcast earlier. You're Matt Zimmerman. Football world.
Scotty Thurman, who came in. And I mean, like there are a lot of those. Scotty, who, by the way, is going to be at our Hogs Illustrated Sports Club luncheon next week. Looking forward to catching up with him. All right, we got time for one more question here. How about this one? This is from Hogjaw Bend. He said, will Arkansas ever form a fundraising scenario similar to what's happened at SMU, where they've got 60 staffers on this new Mustang Partners? That is a new integrated revenue generation division at SMU. And Christina and I talked about this the other day. I don't see this being something that Arkansas is going to do anytime soon. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they're a day away from rolling this out. I don't know. But it just seems like this is really on the cutting edge of how to generate revenue within your program. And I don't see Arkansas being on the cutting edge in any, I mean, they just haven't been in the last several years. I think that, you know, they are doing things that they're trying to, you know, generate some revenue where they can. You know, they had the banana ball team that went to bomb earlier this year. Hunter Yurchek has told us that the Savannah Bananas are potentially coming to Razorback Stadium. I think they put in a bid trying to get them to come to Razorback Stadium at some point during 2026. He says they're trying to get another major concert at Razorback Stadium, similar to what they did with Garth Brooks a few years ago. They've put in a bid to host a World Cup. I don't think it's a qualifying game, but I think it might be like a friendly or an exhibition. And so certainly those will add some, you know, I mean, all of those are probably going to be seven-figure revenue generators or greater. But that's different than what I think what SMU has done, or maybe what Clemson has done, where it seems like they've gone and they've added these full-on divisions that are out there really trying to be aggressive and pull these type of events into their facilities.
Yeah, and it feels like these types of, you know, departments are generating, they're like trying to make it all-encompassing of like, where in the past, like you've had people heading up your collective and heading up this and that with brand athletes branding themselves and all. They're like trying to pull this all together and have an all-encompassing, like, I don't really know what you call it, just like full service. I don't know what they're calling
department.
It, the department, yeah. The Mustang Partners. I'm curious what this actually looks like, if it's going to be something that does work, if it's something that more programs will follow. But I'm with you that I don't see Arkansas doing something like this.
Yeah, it would be a surprise.
Yeah.
It would be a surprise. And I think it'd be a surprise if – maybe it wouldn't be a surprise. We'll see. Let me just stop right there and just say we'll see.
Yeah.
Like if they are able to pull in the soccer and the concert and the banana ball and have it all within a certain amount of time and it becomes a really big deal and they say we need to do a lot more of this, maybe they break off and they have, you know, some sort of division of the athletics department that would be in charge of putting together more things like this. But I don't see that being something that's going to happen anytime soon. And especially because you're coming off a summer where they just had layoffs, you know, the reduction in force. And so I think that's another reason why I would say it would surprise me that you would go lay off a lot of employees and then turn around and create all these new jobs that would certainly need to be, or you'd need a number of them that would be pretty well-paying jobs.
And I feel like to form something like this, you have to go into it with very high confidence that it's going to be successful because it is a big investment. Nobody wants to like be spending all this money right now to do something that's going to flop and fail. And I just feel like it's a risk unless you feel extremely confident.
And it seems like a lot of the things they're doing right now still feel kind of like pilot programs. Like Garth Brooks, we know that was a test balloon to see if more concerts would work. That was a big success. It felt like, at least to me. But, you know, banana ball, international soccer, those are things that we haven't really tested to see if it would work in Fayetteville or not. And so we'll see. I guess banana ball, it works anywhere they go. Brain dead people who want to watch fake baseball. But sorry if you like banana ball. But I don't like banana ball.
Yeah, I know you don't like how we get to the very important part of the college baseball season and you're having to go find a big game on like ESPN Plus because
wasn't that crazy? Last year there was a big and that was part of what bothers me is how like this entertainment. Fake baseball has taken the place of real baseball that is actually entertaining and good and high quality, where last year they had a game at Clemson and you have like this big matchup that night and it gets relegated to, you know, SEC Network Plus or ESPN Plus, ACC Plus, whatever it was. And yet on ESPN or ESPN2, you've got 3 or 4 hours devoted to banana ball. At Clemson's football stadium.
Which Clemson stadium got more time on with baseball on linear TV, their football stadium or baseball stadium?
Probably football. Probably their football stadium. I can't do the banana ball thing. Yeah. It's just like I can't do banana ball. Yeah. It is beyond my comprehension.
There are a lot of banana ball lovers.
They are. There's a store here in town that sells banana ball gear. And they've only been in Fayetteville one, like, and this was like way before they ever came to Fayetteville. Yeah. And it just it is beyond my mind's ability to comprehend what people see in Banana Ball.
Yeah. Well, that whenever back to just the topic of the concert and Banana Ball and all this, there was that real season, I feel like, covering Arkansas, where it was like they were coming up with any way to create a dollar. Like, as far as, I mean, the Tennessee game, they were selling like chunks of the goalpost, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was stuff like that. It was like, whatever we can do to test it out and see if this can make some money, we're going to try and do it. I mean, heck, you couldn't put, you know, it back in the can when you say that, oh, if we get this much NIL money or whatever it was, we'll put the slobbering hog on the basketball court. Like, mm-hmm. You can't just not do that now if you don't reach the goal. But it's just like, they were trying anything.
Yeah. Yeah. It's it seems like it's not been quite as creative. There were some questions today that I'm not going to get to about, you know, what's the future of NIL collectives. Maybe we'll touch on all this tomorrow. But it's a weird time. It's a weird time in terms of trying. Everybody's trying to figure out how to make revenue. I just don't know that there's a lot of programs out there that have really figured out how to perfect it right now. And it's a weird time to be in college sports. So we appreciate you being with us today. Hope that we see you on our website, wholehogsports.com. This afternoon, this evening. By the way, the SEC football schedule for 2026 drops tonight. So come to our website. We'll have some coverage of that announcement, and we'll talk about that on our show tomorrow. Hope that we see you there. Have a great day, everybody.